This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
The book, Guitars and Gardenias, a country western love story thriller by Sierra Ann Hill. Sierra, how are you today?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. It's a beautiful day in Texas. Where are you from?
Beverly Hills, California.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, we are here to talk about your book. How did you come to write this book?
This book was inspired by events in my life. In my early 30s, I was diagnosed with young-onset Parkinson's, which I've had for 23 years. At the time, my fiancé did not want to become a caretaker, so he left. And it really hurt me. And I thought, I could either, shoot myself in the head, or I could write a book that would end the way I wanted it to end, with the romantic leads getting together. So I decided, the more I got into it, the more I decided to make these characters larger than life. So I made the male lead country western superstar and the female lead a former supermodel turned music business executive. And it's their story. The complication is the male lead has a stalker who doesn't want him involved with anyone, so she presents rather a threat. That's it.
Speaking of that, are there any characters or scenes that you'd like to highlight during this interview?
Well, this is an adult novel, and there's one. The reason they can get together is the female lead, Leah, has had a brain surgery that masks her symptoms, conceals her symptoms, so he doesn't know she has Parkinson's, which is a real thing. I had this surgery myself. So basically, the scene where they're about to get involved physically, where he asks her what he can do and what he can't do without hurting her, it's kind of awkward and humorous.
What is one thing you want readers to take away from your work?
Well, when they get together in the end, whether or not the stalker gets the best of them, that the human spirit can triumph over evil.
Wow, that's a very beautiful message. Who do you feel this book will appeal to and why?
That's a good question. You're normal romance reader, but also the twist of the stalker gives it appeal to male readers.
How would you introduce this book to a friend in a few sentences?
I would say, here I wrote this book, you'll like it. I'm just kidding. I would say it was a romance against all odds, but that works out okay.
Tell me how this book is unlike others with similar topics. What sets it apart?
I think the issue of the illness, because when Mattson, who's the male lead character, comes to accept her the way she is, it's quite a revelation. Because he's had romantic disasters of his own, and he'd rather stay with her than go out and chance it with someone else. But the way the revelation comes to him is extremely unique.
Where and when does this story take place?
The present, all over on the road. counseling for his career.
Where can we find your book?
On the publisher's website, abbottpress.com. And BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com.
Are there three words that you feel would best describe your work?
That's a good one. Here we go.
What was one of the most challenging parts about writing this book, and or the most fun?
The most fun was weaving the antagonist, Jocelyn, who's a stalker, through the plot. Because just when the two lovers get to a certain point where they're okay with her disease, the stalker kidnaps Leah. And then it's downhill all the way till the end when Mattson attempts a dramatic rescue. There's motorcycle stunts. There's all kinds of stuff in this book.
The book, Guitars and Gardenias, a country western love story thriller by Sierra Ann Hill. Now, Sierra, are there any characters that you'd like to introduce the audience to?
Yes, the main characters are Leah Hayes, who's the female romantic lead, Mattson Daly, who's our country western superstar, and Jocelyn, who's the stalker who's determined to kill Leah. And then, of course, there's Mattson's band, with a bunch of funny characters, and Leah's best friend, who's another source of comedy. It's a very funny book. In addition to having all these serious themes.
Is there anything we haven't covered during this interview that you feel your audience needs to know?
This book is full of twists and turns and surprises. And I enjoyed writing it. And I think the reader will enjoy reading it.
Do you have any other publications or books that you feel your audience needs to know about?
Not yet. This is my very first one. I wrote this because it pertains not only to Parkinson's, but to people with disabilities also that feel there's no hope, that they'll be alone. The way this book turns around and emphasizes the deeper qualities Mattson sees in Leah is very inspiring, so I'm told, for all people with conditions. As well as well people.
Well, that's very exciting. Do you have any other books in the works?
I have one in mind. It's kind of a Beverly Hills soap opera. I was inspired a lot. This is not going to sound very cultural, but Jackie Collins is someone who I've enjoyed reading for many years. And I think if it wasn't for her, I would not have had the courage to attempt a first novel, especially being ill.
Well, I commend you deeply for your work and your passion towards this.
Thank you.
The book, Guitars and Gardenias, a country western love story thriller by Sierra Ann Hill. Sierra, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Choosing to Live, Enduring the Loss of a Loved One. And our guest author who joins me from Western Texas is Dr. Jerry D. Campbell, retired minister. Dr. Campbell, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you, Jay. It's a pleasure to be here.
And if I may, I may refer to you by your first name, Jerry, if we can, during the interview.
That would be preferable.
All right, sir. You have a background as an educator in the field of theology. This book has to do with a very important topic that is prevalent in our society, and I guess just as a human being, we have loss in our lives. Tell our listeners where the foundation of this book came from and how it got to be written.
All right, Jay. You know, when my late wife died 5 years ago this April, it was quite a surprise. It was unexpected and somewhat actually accidental insofar as it stemmed from an infection for a broken ankle. And when I was then thrown into grief, I was also president of a school of theology, and I had just created a new interreligious university and was serving as a startup founding president of that. So I was president of two institutions, and it was a really important, critical time. And so I needed to simultaneously work and grieve. I knew grief was a challenging it's a challenging thought for us, task for us as human beings, and sometimes we grieve better and sometimes not so well.
This is true.
So I looked for a structure, Jay. I knew about a book written by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and her partner, Kessler. I knew it's called On Grief and Grieving, but it just describes the kind of emotions you go through. It doesn't give much advice at all about whether, and if so, how you could manage to get through that in a healthy and more structured way. And I needed to have that kind of structure because there were times I had to be a president and couldn't break down, but it was also clear I had to really grieve adequately, or grief stays, it hides inside you and it pops out at unexpected, unwanted times if you don't really deal with it.
As a title, you've used the word choosing to live. Was that something that you personally underwent as far as the grieving process, or was this something that is a little more general in its terminology and its usage?
Well, it is really a very general. It's a very general response, particularly when a partner or a spouse, someone really that close to you die. What happens is there are a number of studies, or easy to find if you Google it, that show that there is a statistically much higher chance that the remaining partner will also die within 6 months.
Yes, I've heard that.
And it's called the broken heart syndrome.
Wow.
And so one of the first things I felt was this overwhelming desire to, you know, to just kind of give up and die because, you know, the woman I'd spent, we'd been married more than 43 years, and we'd been engaged 4 years before that. So, you know, my partner of 47 plus years had just died. And, so I felt like I could lay down and die.
Yes.
And it's a very general, I think it affects almost everyone in that situation. And right then, when you feel the worst, you really have to make a decision that you're going to go on with your life, you're going to get over it, you're going to do your grief, and move forward.
You also warn about some pitfalls that happen during that time frame, not just the fact that you want to give up and quit, but the susceptibility to addiction. That's something also that can creep in.
Oh, yes. Well, and so I would come home from a day's work, and my wife, Vita, would be at home to greet me and meet me. We'd sit down. She'd pour me a glass of wine or maybe occasionally a glass of scotch. And we would debrief, you know, how was your day? How was your day? And we'd have a nice kind of conversation. It was one of our patterns. You know, I'd have a glass of wine, and then we would either go to dinner, or most times she would have dinner ready.
Right.
And so that was just kind of the way it went. Well, when I came home that first week, she's not there after her death. And so I poured myself a scotch.
Right.
There's nobody to talk to. I drink the scotch, so I pour too. And then it, when I was a youngster, I was taking the SAT exam, and there was one of those reading comprehension questions. And I remember reading on that test that one of the signs of alcoholism is one drinks when one's alone. And so I immediately became worried that I was in a susceptible circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And that I really had to. Now, and I've, you know, in the time since then, I've known many people for whom they were social drinkers or very moderate drinkers, that kind of situation then put over the, sort of pushed over the edge, and they began to drink too much.
They became ensnared by it, yes.
That's right. And it's not just alcohol, it's other kinds of controlled substances, I think.
Doctors in that situation will sometimes prescribe calming meds, and those can be addictive.
They can. I think it's if your doctor prescribes it, that's fine. Take it, but make yourself a promise. You're only going to take it. You know, you're only going to get it refilled twice. I mean, whatever. I mean, but nobody is going to put the limits on it unless you do in that situation, because you find yourself then alone.
You, in your book of 146 pages, did you come up with anything that you may have had an aha moment? In other words, you were thinking about the process and the basics of grief recovery, and something struck you that you had not thought of before in your pastoral or your ministry studies.
Well, yes, there were. I can mention a couple of things. One is, you know, I had always thought if I can just find the right words, I can help somebody who's in that situation by talking with them. And the revelation to me was there is nothing anyone can say or that I could do myself that would bring Vita back.
That's true.
And so. So it's not so much looking for the words to say to make somebody feel better. It's really the only thing one can do for a friend or a loved one who has suffered that kind of loss is just to be present for them. But it's looking for the right words is almost inevitably bound for failure because your words can't bring the person back. So that was, you know, that was a kind of revelation to me. I know that maybe I was simplistic and always thinking I could say the right thing or find the right thing to say, but I discovered that's not the case.
It's one of those things that guys try to do. They try to fix things, and as guys, when we are faced with a crisis or with a loss of loved one or maybe a friend is going through a situation, we feel like we have to have the answer, and it's not necessarily the case. We just need to be there, as you've described.
That's right. Just, you know, express your, you know, your compassion and your support by just being present. And, you know, sometimes that's just it, you know, and invite someone over to play cards or just, so it's not what you're going to say. It's just that you're going to be there for them. I think the other thing I would mention, Jay, is that it really pained me in a way as I began to get a little distance from Edith's death to find that I was growing kind of emotionally and I was maturing in a certain way because of her loss. And I did not want to grow as a result of her mm-hmm. loss. That seemed like a bad thing. But so I think the second thing I would mention that was sort of a revelation to me was that if we do grieve in a healthy way, when we get to the end of that difficult, challenging process, we actually do become more mature in terms of emotional and sometimes in terms of just our psychological well-being.
Jerry, I'll mention for my listeners also, although you are a theologian by culture and by background, your book is not a biblical thesis on the aspects of death and counseling. It's a personal story and is very conversational in its style. Would that be the right way to describe it?
Yes, I think that's correct. What I actually wrote it because one of my friends, who was a faculty member in the field of spiritual care and counseling, said that it just no one had suggested that you could manage your grief in a healthy way. And since I had developed a process or a system for kind of managing my grief, being certain that I grieved while being certain that I could be professional on the job when I needed to, he said that might help other people. So he actually encouraged me to write the book. And so the purpose is really to help people understand what they're going through is normal and how they might manage it in a way that gives them healthy grieving and brings them to a more positive outcome.
This book is a vital resource for anyone who may be going through a crisis personally or know someone who is going through this type of crisis. A broad-based interest subject matter that you have covered.
Well, it, you know, unfortunately, grief is something that will hit all of us sometimes more than once. You know, we lose parents, we lose siblings, we lose close friends, and then, of course, we lose our partners or spouses. And so it is very broad-based. And by the way, Jay, I've had people come to talk to groups where I've talked about grief who have lost pets. There was a grandfather grieving the fact that his grandchild had spina bifida. And so he was really kind of grieving the loss of a hope or an image he had for his grandchild. He still clearly loved his grandchild, but there was that, he's still experiencing that feeling of loss. So the one thing I would do differently if I could start over with the book is in the introductory part of the book would broaden the avenue into grief because it happens for reasons than just the loss of a partner, a spouse, or a loved one. It happens over
and over again.
Other issues as well.
In recapping what you have said in your book, there are five or six, maybe ten specific items or checklist things that you suggest to those who are reading the book? The first one, and the most important, I think, is make the decision to live. That's a very vital and important thing. And then it says set aside regular times to think and reflect on your grief and begin today. Don't drown out your grief with TV, music, web surfing, or other forms of distraction. Don't turn to alcohol or drugs as a solace for emotional pain. And the most important, I think, for those who are grieving and those who have experienced loss, don't hesitate to get help. Where do you suggest someone get help? Where can they get that first line of defense?
Well, there are we're fortunate to have a lot of good sources of help. One of them, of course, if you happen to be in one of the religious traditions, you would have a minister, a rabbi, a imam, or you know, a spiritual leader of some kind who regularly gets asked for help in these areas. And those folks tend to become really good at knowing how to help you in those circumstances. Then we have a wonderful cadre in this country of psychologists and psychiatrists who are extremely good at helping us deal with these kinds of emotional traumas. And so those are, I think, are the kind of the first two lines
of defense
of help. But also let friends and family help.
Absolutely.
It does help to talk about it. And friends and family provide more support sometimes than you might think until the chips are down. And then they can really be the ones that help you get through it.
The title of the book, again, is Choosing to Live. And during the loss of a loved one, my guest author, Jerry D. Campbell. Thank you, sir, for joining me today. Where can my listeners get a copy of this vital resource?
Well, they can find it from Archway, but it's also available through Barnes & Noble and Amazon.
And do you have a website where you are extending the opportunity for people to connect with you?
Yes, there is an Enduring Loss website, Enduring Loss at WordPress. There's also then jdcbooks.com.
Very good. Thank you for sharing your story of a very difficult crisis and process that you went through, but were willing to share with others. Thank you again for taking time to visit with me today.
Jay, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you so much. And Campbell, just for those who may do a search online, is spelled C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L. Jerry D. Campbell has been my guest. Thank you, sir, for joining me today, Dr. Campbell.
Thank you, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Lord of 10,000 Years, A Paper Dragon. And joining me from California in the United States is author Sidney Chan. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Thank you, Jay.
I understand by your bio that you are actually a CPA or have been a CPA by trade or by focus, and then you decided you wanted to be an author. There must have been something that inspired you or put you in that direction. What was it?
Well, I'm still a CPA, still practicing tax law, and I work for the Internal Revenue Service for over 10 years. And the tax, the field of taxation is really my specialty, and I did it most of my life. And what inspired me to write a book was the fact that I saw a movie called The Last Emperor. I guess Bertolucci, Bernardo Bertolucci, the Italian director, made it back in the 80s. And it was a very, very good movie, actually, very entertaining. And I looked at it a few times, and then I said, gee, you know, the life of this particular subject of the movie, The Last Emperor, had a sad life, but then the one before him had an even sadder life. So I said, maybe I should tell that story to someone, to the world. And then that was back in the late 80s. Then I started tempering with writing it. And I wrote it, and I think by the early 90s, I finished it and kind of looked at it again and said, gee, I'm not a writer. I'm a business person.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that is garbage to people. So I kind of shoved it under actually in the garage in the basement until about a year or so ago. I started cleaning up my basement, and I saw a box of this manuscript. I said, what the heck is that? But then the thing came back to me. Then I picked it up and read it, and I couldn't put it down. Yeah.
You've always been a student of history, especially Chinese history, I'm guessing, would be your focus in the historical documents that you researched. How long did it take you? You say it. You completed this back in the 90s. When you first began to write this, what was the length of time it took to do the research and get the facts that you wanted to convey in your book?
Well, Jay, the research actually was done when I was a teenager, I mean, believe it.
Really?
And because I was a quote-unquote, a real China boy, born in China and then raised in Hong Kong, and came to this country at age 11 and didn't know a word of English, learned ABC from scratch. And my father and my grandfather were very traditional in a way that they wanted me to pursue, continue my Chinese education, which had a fairly good grounding to begin with, and then always told me that, you know, you go to America, you get a good education, get a degree from a university, and then you're going to go back to China, Sid. You know, China is our country. And lo and behold, Chairman Mao came and China changed, of course, right? So I got stuck in America. So I became an American citizen. And then joined the army and served our country, the United States of America. And then I took up, got a business degree, and then I passed the CPA exam, and then I practiced as a CPA for the rest of my life.
Incredible. You have a rich history just personally, but the Lord of 10,000 Years, the Paper Dragon. This is it, a blend of fact and fiction into a novel type a book, or how would you describe this?
All right, now Jay, if you've been through the high school and obviously college and all that,
sure.
Well, maybe high school. In college, we could choose our major and subject that we want to study.
Correct.
But in high school, didn't you hate history?
Well, not too much, no.
I didn't. True. I mean, it's so dry and so dull, and you know, I mean, we learn about Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, but the way they presented it to us was just drab and dull.
Yes.
Correct?
Correct.
So the thing that I felt that my book is different is that I brought the characters to life. I think by looking at these characters in a live format would probably be very enjoyable to read. So if you read it, you don't feel like you're reading some dull history telling about, you know, how China did this and how America did that and so forth. But you have a story. You got live characters. And his research itself was not, it was lengthy in a way because I had to read the books in Chinese. because not too many subjects in China were written in English format. Yeah, there are some in Yale, University, Harvard had a major, a very good Chinese department. The professors there throughout the year had written a lot of books that are worth reading. But again, it's dull, right?
Sure.
So I read a lot of these, research a lot of these in Chinese language. And the research takes a little time. And then once I got it congealed in my mind, and the writing of the book of all things, it seemed like just flew right out. I didn't have to struggle. And I, thinking back, maybe I did all that like in a couple of months, just boom, bang, 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 bang.
Wow. So you had a lot of fun, actually, sharing
history.
Well,
I had a lot of fun.
Yes. Your main character, and I'm going to mispronounce this, I'm sure, but I'm going to ask you to forgive me and help me pronounce it.
No,
I got Xu Xi, is that correct?
Xu Xi, yeah.
Xi. I came close. Xu Xi.
Yeah. You're close. But the Chinese names are very difficult. And I chose to use the older traditional romanization of the Chinese character, the Chinese lettering, the letters, rather than the new system. They have a new system called Pinyin. Xu Xi, actually, the way it's written now in the Chinese language, an English version, is C-I-X-I.
Really?
Xu Xi. So anyway, I chose to use the old way because I just find that Peking was Peking back in those days. And it's very, very funny if I were to use Beijing as a subject, where this whole book was mostly in Beijing, today's term. I chose to use Peking because to the foreigners, it's always Peking back in those days anyway. So I retained that just to retain the flavor of the time.
You've described Xu Xi as a power-hungry woman who almost brought down a country destined to become a superpower.
Yeah.
So this is based on a very unusual character-driven plot, especially since we think of ladies in culture and especially the Chinese culture as being a little bit retiring, not out front and not power-hungry. How did you come up with this concept?
Well, it's if one reads Chinese history throughout about 2,000, maybe 1,500, I think it's almost 2,000 years of recorded history. A lot of it had to be read in Chinese because a lot of the history were not translated into English or written in foreign languages.
Correct.
But there were over this period of 2,000 years, maybe a handful, maybe five or six, a handful of powerful women that throughout the years, throughout the centuries, had taken power of an empire. And, in every case, almost each of them brought the empire down.
Mm.
So I'm not very chauvinistic or politically incorrect. But it just seemed like every time a woman gets into a power position in China anyway, something bad happens. Would have happened.
Well,
this is a drastic case. This is really a drastic case.
Drastic. Jay,
because it's so close to the century. It's not that long ago, right?
Ah.
Yeah.
The Manchu dynasty. Correct?
Manchu dynasty, yeah.
Yes, and when was the period of the Manchu dynasty?
The Manchus came in power in the 1644, mid-17th century. And that is the one that I'm researching now, that period of time. If this one succeeds, I will write another one on that particular period of time to tell the world, to entertain people. I don't want to be presumptuous to teach people, at least just entertain them as to how the Manchu came into power and rule about China for 260 some odd years. And it was a powerful dynasty at the beginning, and like all things, and it started weakening, and then got into the early 20th century. It was just ridiculously poor and poorly ran, and you know, with the foreign powers, the Western world bringing their power to bear, and China was really, really in such shape back
tough
then
shape.
In the early part of 20th century.
My listeners, who would you think would enjoy this? Do you have to be a history buff to enjoy Lord of 10,000 Years?
First of all, it's got to be someone who loves history.
Okay.
And secondly, better if someone who loves Chinese history.
Mm.
But with China being so powerful now, maybe not militarily that powerful yet, but economically really is powerful, right?
Correct.
And with China have awakened, I would think that for people, maybe in the 20s and the 30s, those who travel to China to do business with China, and this would perk their interest in how China has come so long and in such a short time to bring in itself off the knees to be a major power. So, and also then to the older generation, people maybe in the retired, you know, generation, they probably a lot of, I think mostly, I think this will appeal to American-born Chinese, those who was not good enough to read Chinese, put Chinese things in Chinese, the language.
Yes.
And this would introduce them, open their eyes to how bad China, you know, was back in, you know, the period of time that I covered.
Is there some action scene in your book? I know
a lot of the movies are
that way.
Western action.
Is there?
you know, the quest of the problem, the demise of the empire, was brought forth by foreign invasions.
Mm-hmm.
The Boxer, maybe some people heard of the Boxer Rebellion.
Yes,
B-O-X-E-R, Boxers.
Yes.
I mean, the Boxers, people with gloves and hitting each other. And the gist of the story was that the Boxers were introduced to this lady, Empress Dowager Cixi, to tell her that the Boxers have all these magical power that will repel the foreigners. I mean, goddammit, you know, the foreigners got guns and
right.
and things, and it's no match. But it was, you know, I'm not prejudging or judging the motive and the MO of the foreign powers back in those days. But China was wiped to be pink, you know, to be divided.
Right. That's true.
And every country have gone in there with Great Britain being the leader of the pact and you know, and went into China and really subdivided it. And you know, I mean, it's a compelling story in a sense of not only confined to the court, I mean, the imperial court of the Manchu dynasty, but the world scene at the time, of the time, yeah.
You have written this for my listeners. The story has been written in conversational style as though Mr. Chan was actually there. It's done in dialogue style, so it's not just dry history. This is engaging and will draw them into the characters and also the action that you've created. The title of the book, again, is Lord of 10,000 Years, A Paper Dragon, and my author, Sidney Chan. Sir, where can my listeners get a copy of this 374-page novel?
Jay, I just noticed yesterday that it's been listed in Amazon Kindle, ready to be, you know, to be bought or looked at. So I would suggest your readers go to Amazon.com and then Kindle and tap under Lord of 10,000 Years. You will see a synopsis of my book and, you know, and everything else. The book also is available in paper printed form, hardcover and softcover. And all that is in the Amazon app.
Wonderful. Do you have a website established yet, Mr. Chan, or are you
I do have a website. I mean, an email address. I have not done a website. I'm working on that.
Working on it. Okay. They can do a search under your name, Sydney Chan. Sydney is spelled spelled the typical way, S-I-D-N-E-Y, and Chan.
S-I-D-N-E-Y, correct.
C-H-A-N. And find out about this book. And from what you've described to me, you have enjoyed the process so much that there will be a follow-up book of some type in the near future.
I hope so. I'm working on it, Jay.
Excellent. Well, I have enjoyed visiting with you, and best of luck on this book, Lord of 10,000 Years, The Paper Dragon, and our author, Sydney Chan, who has joined me from California. Thank you, sir, for being a part of today's show.
Thank you, Jay. Nice talking to you.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.